It's now time for the Fantasy 411 podcast.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Fantasy 411. I'm Matthew Leach, talking fantasy baseball with MLB.com's lead fantasy writer, Fred Zinke. A little bit later, we will be joined by MLB.com's Blue Jays beat reporter, Gregor Chisholm, to talk about the always interesting Blue Jays. But in the meantime, we have a lot of other stuff to get to, so we are going to get right to it. Aaron Altherr has been ridiculous. He's slugging .670. He was a guy who it wasn't entirely clear even what his role was with the Phillies coming in. They went and searched for a lot of outfielders, I think in part because they didn't really trust him. And now it appears that he is safe and productive. I think it's clear he's got to be on right now. Somebody's got to have a reason to pick this guy up in pretty much every league. So I think the question is, Fred, do you buy the combination of performance and opportunity? Do you think that he will continue hitting, not slugging .670, but at this kind of level and have the opportunity to do so from here on out?
Well, I mean, he's going to dip. I mean, well, his BABIP's .368, which is high but not crazy high for someone who moves pretty well. But if he could even hit .280 going forward, that would be nice. And even if his power drops off a little bit, I liked Altherr and scooped him up in a lot of leagues last season when he came back from that wrist injury near the end of July, and then he wasn't very good. And I'm feeling like I think that was probably a product of him missing most of the season with a wrist injury and that being hard to come back from. And I don't know, in my eyes, with the Phillies as kind of a rebuilding club, Altherr perfectly fits the kind of player who has to be in their lineup every day, even when Howie Kendrick gets back, whether Kendrick moves around, whether Michael Saunders sits at times. But I think they have to play Altherr as long as he's hitting, and I like his ability to contribute in all categories. I think that means that if there's the power dries up for a little while, he could still maybe steal some bases or hit for average, or if the average dips some weeks, well, maybe he still hits a home run that week and steals a base. So I think he probably is someone that needs to be owned just for that diverse profile.
If I give him a little bump over his 2015 numbers, 2015, 241, 338, 489, five homers, 22 RBI in a quarter of a season. If I give him a little bump over that, and I say that, from here on out, he hits .260, slugs .500-ish, which, from here on out is probably 15, 20 home runs. You think that's a reasonable look at what we're dealing with him?
Yeah, and that was the reason that I was interested in him when he was coming back last season, is I looked at that 2015 and I thought, hey, here's someone who across a full season of work could be in the high teens or maybe even 20 in home runs and steals and hopefully could produce at least a respectable batting average. And I think he's stolen just three bases so far, but that's really not bad. It's 91, 107 plate appearances, 91 at bats. So across a full season, that's putting him in around 15 steals. And yeah, I know power's up, but 15 to 20 homers, 15 to 20 steals, a .260, .270 batting average, that's playable in a lot of leagues.
Guy I am actually in on pretty fully, I'm buying Mark Reynolds. I don't think he's going to do this all year. And I know that he's not really young. But one of the reasons I'm buying Reynolds is, with the exception of the batting average, he's not doing anything we haven't seen him do at some point in his career. He has been a power monster at earlier points in his career. And in recent years, he's shown a little more grasp of the strike zone. And this year, what intrigues me is that he's getting back to how much he used to walk. And he hasn't matched it with that 200 strikeout pace. So, I'm in. I think Reynolds is going to be a really intriguing player from here to the end of the year, really productive player. I think I have him in two leagues. I'm pretty much buying, and I don't think the opportunity is going to go away. If he hits, they'll find the spot for him. I don't think there's any reason they couldn't play Ian Desmond somewhere other than first base. I don't think he hits 48 home runs or 46 home runs or whatever he's on pace to. And I don't think he hits .320, but I think he's a perfectly legitimate, not just tolerable, but productive mixed league first baseman from here to the end of the year. Am I too optimistic on Reynolds?
I don't think so. And I'm starting to come around too. And I was very much of the mindset that this would be a short-term thing because he would head back to the bench at some point. But you hit this point now where the Rockies are faring well enough, that they're competitive, and in that situation, they're going to play the players who are giving them the most production. Like, you cannot sit someone who has a 1,000 OPS right now. And if he's still hitting, like, they have to play him. And as you said, Ian Desmond can play left field. I wonder if when David Dahl is finally ready to return, if he just ends up back in AAA. And that wasn't maybe isn't where he belongs, but he may just be squeezed out where they can't sit Reynolds. They don't want Dahl to play sparingly, and Desmond needs to be in the outfield. I'm not sure exactly how they'll shake it all out, but bottom line is you can't sit Reynolds. And this is just a really favorable environment for him to hit it. It's perfect for his skill set. As you said, if he could just keep the strikeout total to something reasonable, and so far he's doing that. So I've moved off. Like a few weeks ago, I thought if I'm a Reynolds owner, sell high. Now I think if I'm a Reynolds owner, unless I get a nice offer, I think I'll just hold and see where this goes.
Yeah, I mean, look, part of it is that I think there's likely to be enough skepticism about him that I don't know how high you can sell on him. I think because of the history in recent years and because of those questions about his opportunity, there's some, but I don't know that there's that much of a sell high opportunity on him, so you may as well hold to me.
Yeah, that's what I think too. I mean, there are going to be leagues out there that aren't very competitive where someone trades Mark Reynolds for Edwin Encarnacion or something like that. But I mean, most of the people listening to us are in competitive leagues where no one's going to make a move like that. So yeah, if you can't trade Reynolds for an established, you know, really quality hitter, and you probably can't in a good league, then, like I said, just enjoy the ride. You have a power hitter who's cut his strikeout rate and plays half his games at Coors Field. Like, just enjoy it and see where it goes.
And we're going to use this as a segue into a topic that, as we speak right now on Thursday morning, is a little muddy. But what we need to do as we record is just treat this as the worst case scenario because, excuse me, there's a lot of reporting out there that the Braves may be in for the worst case scenario. Last night at SunTrust Park, I almost said Turner Field, and I was there. Freddie Freeman took a ball off the left wrist, apparently. It looked like the meat of his hand, and honestly, it didn't look that bad at the time. But there's a lot of reporting out there that he is dealing with some kind of a break. Our own Mark Bowman of MLB.com is reporting that if there is a break, they're probably looking at 8 to 10 weeks without Freeman. And then the other worry there is, you know, this is a guy who had a wrist thing before and was slow to get right. You know, it took him a good long while to get back to the guy we're used to seeing. So, you know, one, I don't think we can tell anybody right now to drop Freeman. But I think the question is, and that's where the Reynolds question comes in, is if you've been relying on Freddie Freeman, who has emerged over the last basically 12 months as, no exaggeration, one of the certainly 10 and maybe 5 best hitters in baseball, what do you do? And that's where Mark Reynolds comes in. Is Mark Reynolds a guy that maybe you look to target if you just lost Freddie Freeman?
Yeah, that's not a bad fit. I did think before we started to say that if I was a Freeman owner and I am in one league, you know, how would I replace him? I think that because he's the first baseman, my first step would be to try to replace his power as much as I can. I mean, you're not going to find, like it goes without saying, you're not going to find someone who can replace Freddie Freeman on waivers. But what I can replace is a lot of that power. Maybe not all of it, but a lot of it. So, you know, sitting on waivers in a lot of mixed leagues, you've got Logan Morrison, Justin Smoak, Tommy Joseph, Justin Boer, Josh Bell's hitting for some power. So, I kind of pick among players like that and try to replace at least some of his power numbers and not as much worry about replacing the batting average because it's going to be hard to find a high average hitter who can do anything else on your waiver wire. You know, you could go for maybe a Ulieski Gurriel, but I think I would try to replace the power if I had to go to waivers and then see kind of where my bat, because batting averages will trend on its own kind of sometimes, especially in small spurts of the season, and some other hitters on your team may hit better in the next few weeks and pump your batting average in its place. So I try to replace the power and then hope for the best with the batting average, and trading for Reynolds would be a nice fit in that area because he would replace the power, and we don't know if he would replace the batting average or not.
Are there any buy low first baseman that you'd have an eye on right now?
Well, if I wanted to try to replace the batting average, Victor Martinez would probably be like a buy low kind of one. And also Adrian Gonzalez's value is like really, really low right now. I mean, you're not going to get any probably much power from him, but I think when he comes back, he could hit for average. I also think that I'm also a little intrigued by Brandon Belt. I own Belt in some leagues, and I'm usually kind of the high man on Belt. So Kendrys Morales for the same reason. They both are hitting for power, but not for average. And I think that eventually they will hit for a higher average, and hopefully the power stays. So maybe Morales and Belt are also, their owners are probably not that excited about owning them right now.
Kevin Pillar, a guy that I really liked sort of down the stretch in 2015 and really expected to have a better 2016 than he did. I kind of thought that his second half and postseason in 15 was a jumping off point to him emerging as a really good all-around player. And it didn't really happen in 16. Been really good this year. We will for now put aside the topic of whatever he did or did not say last night in Atlanta. One, we don't know, and two, it's just not really for us in fantasy baseball. Let's talk about the player and the fantasy player. And the fantasy player is pretty intriguing. I don't think he sustains all of this, but I also don't think he goes back to the 16 player, and I don't even think he goes back to the 15 player. I think there's something of a true step up here. And you know, a guy that can do, you know, kind of what you were talking about a little earlier, help you in a lot of ways. He's going to score runs. He's going to help you in a lot of ways. He can hit a few home runs, not a lot, but, you know, it wouldn't surprise me at all if he's 10-plus home runs from here to the end of the year. I'm not buying fully what he is now, but I am buying that this is a breakout year. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, for sure. And I'm interested to see what he can do hitting now that he's earned that leadoff spot. I'm interested to see what he can be when Josh Donaldson comes back. And even when Tulowitzki comes back, just when that lineup gets longer, but especially when Donaldson comes back. With Pillar, there was what he's really done, and I applaud him for doing this. Like, he had really poor plate discipline and kind of swung at everything prior to this season. I mean, his career high for walks is 28 in 2015. He's on pace to go beyond that 28 walks by before the All-Star break. And that change has been huge for him. That's something I know that they were on him about in Toronto, that, you know, you could maybe be a top of the order hitter if you could just get on base a little more often by drawing some more walks. And then, you know, so that extra strike zone control from him this year, he's already got 13 walks. That's put him up to the leadoff spot. Guys like Pillar either hit at the top or bottom of a lineup, which really, you know, changes their fantasy value because they're not going to hit in the middle. And now that he's at the top and seems like he can stay there for a while, now I think he's someone who we can count on probably to hold a lot of the value that he's giving right now and be a 20-something steal player who scores 85 or 90 runs, a few home runs, and a decent batting average.
Over the course of his career, Hunter Pence has been a guy who, and I don't want to, this is going to sound like a dig, I don't entirely mean it that way, but whose primary value, or who I should say, a lot of his value in fantasy came from durability, because he has never been a high average hitter, but he's been a guy on good teams and good offenses who played a lot. And so that has meant 24, 27, 20 home runs in 12, 13, 14. It has meant often 90, and in one case 100 RBI. It has meant runs. It has meant sometimes, and often in the neighborhood of 15 steals. And it has added up to a guy who, if he plays all the time, is pretty valuable in fantasy because he helps you in a lot of ways. He has played under 200 games now since the start of the 2015 season. And he hasn't suddenly turned into a 320 hitter or a bulk power hitter or a bulk speed guy to make up for that. And to me, that diminishes nearly all of his fantasy value. I think in a mixed league, you can drop Pence. Do you see more there to like than I do?
No, and I think you hit the nail on the head with that he was getting those 20 or low 20s home run totals and around 90 in runs and RBIs, but he was doing that by playing in 162 games. So when you even I found over the years when I would project him going into a season, if I was just going to project him for even a good amount of games, 145 or 150, he still didn't often come out looking that great because all of a sudden the home run total falls just under 20, the RBI and run totals come down to about 80. Like, he really needed those 160 games to get to the point where he was helping, you know, 10 team league teams and 12 team league fantasy teams. And now that's gone, you know, on a per game basis, he's not really productive. I think 10 team leagues for sure drop, 12 team leagues, yeah, I would drop. And In a 15-team league, I don't know if I would drop him because those leagues are pretty deep, but I would probably look around. It might be hard to trade him right now, but if he has a healthy stretch, I would probably look around, and if I could trade him for, you know, anyone who I was kind of excited about getting on a lower end, I would make that switch because with the durability gone, yeah, and as you said, he doesn't steal bases anymore.
AJ Pollock is on the DL again. Is he now a guy that we need to just bake in when you talk about evaluating him going forward, that you're just not going to figure he's going to play 150 games?
Yeah, I think so. And I think we just assume that something will happen at some point during the season. And if you're lucky, you get that 2015 season where one more time in his career where everything clicks for him. And I also think maybe he's the kind of guy where this one's tricky because if you have that opinion on him, you're probably not the one who drafts him because they'll probably be someone who sees him a little more optimistically. But if you have him and he has a really nice stretch, he may be a sell high candidate, different than other. We usually say sell high as players we think are going to regress. We don't think he's going to regress necessarily when he's playing well on a per game basis, but just the inevitability or likelihood of that injury. So if he has when he comes back, if he has a month where, you know, he steals 7 or 8 bases, I think if I was a Pollock owner, unless it was later in the year and I really needed to kind of take the chance of him staying healthy the rest of the way, I think maybe then I might look to trade him because he is really good when he's playing, but this seems to be like an ongoing issue with him.
Xander Bogaerts has not really, he hasn't really hit for any power at all. And hasn't really kind of taken the step forward that I think a lot of people thought he might. And I wish I could remember exactly when we had this conversation. It's not fair. He hasn't taken the power step forward. I remember when we had this conversation. But, you know, he was a guy that, for this reason, I just, at some point, maybe it was even going into 15, if we've been doing this that long, that I was a little hesitant to put at the level of some of the top guys because of that power and because sometimes those guys who are sort of good at a lot of things in baseball, their fantasy value doesn't quite match up. Now, the flip side of that is he's hitting .338 and he hit .320 2 years ago, and it's entirely possible this guy is actually a .320 hitter, which certainly affects his value. But for a guy I think we evaluated just generally thinking the power was going to come, if the power doesn't come, what does that do to your evaluation of Bogaerts and where he kind of ranks among shortstops?
Yeah, he, you're right. He may become one of those poster child for the more value to his actual team than his fantasy team because, especially with home run totals being up, even in the middle infield, I mean, if he's a 10 or 12 home run, let's say he's a 12 home run player and a 12 steal player, even if he's a .300 hitter, like, it's fine. You're basically DJ LeMahieu at that point, which is, like, solid. There's nothing wrong with owning DJ LeMahieu, but that doesn't put you in the conversation with Francisco Lindor and Corey Seager and players who he was around that conversation. Now, what's interesting when you look at his stat line, so yeah, a lot of owners are disappointed in him. Career high batting average right now, career high on base percentage by a lot, career high slugging percentage, and career high OPS, even though he hasn't hit a home run yet, which is a really odd stat line. But yeah, I don't think he can be in that top tier until we see more power from him. That being said, in a weird way, he could be a buy low in some leagues because there may be Bogaerts owners who are just really disappointed to have a guy in their lineup in 2017 who has zero home runs in the second half of May.
And a guy that, you know, if you tell me, there's no being sure that he just repeats, but you give me three more of .338 and 6 steals and 20 runs, I'm probably going to find a place for that in my lineup.
Exactly. So, I mean, yeah, we're not too down on him, but yeah, it's hard. I don't know. If I said 10 home runs the rest of the way, would you take the over or under on that?
Probably take the under, honestly. Even with his breakout last year, you know, that's, I think it's a good number, but I might lean under just based on a guy who's only hit more than 12 in a season once.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree.
Bradley Zimmer gets the call. Very exciting player, exciting prospect, and seems to be an opening and seems to be a guy, you know, not just a tools prospect, a performance prospect, a guy who has done it in the minors. What kind of numbers do you expect from here on out from Zimmer?
I do think his batting average will probably be fairly low just because he strikes out a lot. That being said, I've kind of reminded myself not to get too carried away with strikeouts, because we've seen a lot of players come up. Like Joey Gallo strikes out a ton, and he's also delivering plenty of fantasy value so far this year. Cody Bellinger comes up, and people talk about how he struck out a fair amount in the minors. Well, I don't think anyone's disappointed if they went out on a limb and picked up Cody Bellinger. And like with steals being so hard to come by, when Zimmer first came up and we were writing about him for the site, I mentioned at the time he came up, there were only a handful of major leaguers who had stolen 9 bases, and he stole 9 in the minors before he came up this year, also hit 5 home runs already. So because he's that tool, the kind of guy who can help you in a lot of areas, I would be interested in picking him up even in shallow leagues and just hope that the batting average is respectable, which will also be his key to staying in the lineup. You'll almost get all of it or none of it.
Gregory Polanco, another to the DL, and has kind of been was a disappointment when healthy this year. And, you know, I think one of the things when you talk about him is nobody expected the Pirates to be a juggernaut lineup, but Pirates lineup, there's not a lot around him. If Marte is out for the year, or for 80 games at least, and McCutchen just isn't what he used to be, even if Polanco comes back, some of those opportunities to drive in and score runs may not be there. I don't think you're cutting bait on Polanco because of the potential for what he can be in a number of ways he can help, and the youth and the tools and all of that. I don't think anybody's cutting bait on Polanco right now, but in a deal where somebody was just kind of looking to cash in that stock and move on from Polanco, would you rather be on the buying or selling end of that?
For me, totally on the selling end. His struggles date back into the second half of last season. I know he had nagging injuries in the second half of last season, but I do get concerned more when someone has struggled over like almost a calendar year and we're getting there with him. And as you said, that Pirates lineup is one of the weaker ones when you really look at it, both in production and in name value, right? Like you said, Marte isn't there, Jung Ho Kang isn't there, and then McCutchen being a diminished value from what he was. When I look at Polanco this season, he's not hitting as many fly balls. He's not hitting the ball hard on a consistent basis. He is kind of what we were expecting, I think, in batting average. He's never been a high average hitter. He is stealing some bases, but if he's not hitting for any power and he's hitting in a weaker lineup, then he's not really much of an asset. So if I could trade him away now and get someone that I was kind of, I'd be very pleased to trade him for Aaron Altherr. I don't think you can do that right now. I think you could have 2 weeks ago, but maybe the next Aaron Altherr through the system, someone who gets really hot, I would be interested in making that kind of move.
We move on to starting pitchers, and Masahiro Tanaka has had a rough time. You know, hopefully nobody who listens to us was putting too much stock into spring training performance, but there's certainly not a lot of connection between what he's done in the regular season and what he did in the spring. And I think the disconcerting thing about Tanaka, there are a lot of them, but I think the one that stands out to me is the home runs. He got 10 home runs in 45 innings. That is not good. Do you see signs of hope? Do you see an opportunity there? Or do you see a guy that you just kind of, you don't want any part of, and you just got to ride it out if you've got him?
Yeah, I think if you have him, I'm going to be a little like with the Polanco. Like if I had him and I could trade him, this has been the most topsy-turvy season for starting pitchers that I believe I've ever seen since I've been playing fantasy baseball, where it's really hard to predict which pitchers are going to pitch well each week. If I could trade him for a pitcher that I was feeling really good about, you know, a lesser name, I think I would make that switch. You know, looking at his, like, he's just, like, he's pitched really poorly. There's not a huge velocity drop or anything when I'm looking at his statistics. As you said, he's giving up a lot of home runs. I do think, like, in the big picture of getting away from Tanaka, that this is, I think, the final nail in the coffin to not get carried away with spring training stats. That Jose Bautista would be another one where people were raving about him this spring. Oh, he's totally back and everything. And then he's really struggled this year. That really, you just want players to come out of spring training healthy, and that's about it. I don't think I'm a buy on Tanaka unless it was really low. Like, Matthew, if you had the Mike Leake types, like these guys, I think maybe I would trade those types. These guys are pitching Jason Vargas.
Yeah.
Like, would you trade Jason Vargas for Tanaka? Would you trade Leake for Tanaka?
I would, actually. I mean, it would depend on my circumstance, and it would depend on whether what I needed was just to maintain or whether I needed a lightning bolt. I mean, that's really what that would come down to. But If I wasn't just trying to maintain a lead, if I was in a spot where I really needed a boost and was looking for some sort of magic, yeah, that's a deal that I'd do.
I'll go even a little higher. Irvin Santana, Ivan Nova, would you trade them for Tanaka?
It would be harder for me to part with those kind of guys. I just have no faith in Leek, and I really have no faith in Vargas. So, but, yeah, that's about where the line is. It's in there.
Right.
But, again, it also really, to me, depends on your situation and what you're trying to accomplish. And speaking of pitchers who are really hard to figure, Jake Arrieta's walks are back down to essentially pretty close to the level that they were when he was at his best. His strikeout rate is the highest it's ever been. His home runs are way up, which is very unlike him. And he's got a 5.44 ERA. To me, that adds up to kind of maybe an opportunity. That adds up to a guy that I'd at least be kicking the tires on and seeing if somebody was fed up with him yet. And I'm probably still riding it out if I've got him. What are you telling people who ask you about Arrieta?
Yeah, I'm saying sell. So actually, it's too bad. Well, I don't own Arrieta in any league. But this is confirmation bias, though, I think, for me, in the sense of I was the low man on Arrieta heading into the season. And that was actually because I owned him in some leagues in the second half of last year. In the second half of last year, he was really struggling. And the Cubs were playing amazing defense. And he was struggling to get through even six innings in a lot of his starts. And his ERA was high, and his BABIP was quite low. Like, if you go back and trace, I don't have it right in front of me right now, but I was doing in conversation with someone on Twitter yesterday and talking about Arrieta dating back to right around July 1st last season. And his ERA across that stretch was somewhere around 4.7. And the BABIP was only in, like, 270s. So it was still a really nice BABIP for a starting pitcher. And so, I mean, this dates back prior to this year. Now, this year, the Cubs are no longer playing as amazing defense for him. He hasn't had good luck on batted balls. But I feel like even when he improves, he's not going to improve to the point where some people were expecting. I would be faster to part with Arrieta for Tanaka, and I think you could get more for Arrieta right now in a trade than you can get for Tanaka, because I'm seeing more people out there saying that they would like to buy low on him.
Move to a couple of ex-prospects, technically. They are actually both officially ex-prospects because of playing time. But that's, to me, where they really diverge. Eddie Butler, 356 Ks and 517 minor league innings. Jose Berríos, 628 Ks and 591 innings. I am really excited about Berríos. I see what he was doing in AAA. I see what he did in his first start. I see how recently he was a guy that was regarded as a future difference maker, and I, in fact, picked up Berríos in my office league, which is a 10-team mixed. I am on board. I am not on board with Butler. You know, I certainly like the circumstances, but to me, Berríos is a guy who could be a difference maker from here to the end of the year, and Butler is a guy who is a placeholder. Do you diverge from me on either of those guys?
Yeah, I think you explained it perfectly that, yeah, Berríos could be a difference maker. He's a boomer bust. We saw the bust last season when things didn't go well for him. Butler is a placeholder. Now, there is a lot of value right now in the fantasy landscape for placeholders. Like, if Butler could just, you know, he is on a good team. You know, he's finally away from Colorado. Like, if Butler could just go along producing a high threes or four, even like a 4.0 ERA, respectable whip, you know, win his share of games. Like, that would mean a lot to teams right now that maybe are looking to bench a Tanaka or an Arrieta for a week or two and just kind of catch their breath, or just had Trevor Cahill and just lost him to the DL and just need a placeholder. So I do think they're different that way. I'm interested to hear you on Berríos, because typically you don't buy into Twins pitching prospects and have a lot of faith in them developing them. But I feel like you just feel that maybe Berríos is just so good whole series.
The difference is Berríos misses bats. I mean,
yeah.
That's really it. Is this guy has missed bats everywhere. He's missing bats this year, and it really comes down to that. The whole problem with the Twins over the years is they've never really cared if you strike anybody out. Berríos strikes people out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and his value, I think, like, with this pitching landscape, is even greater. Like, typically, people, like, if they're in a FAB system where they're bidding on players on waivers, or if they're using their waiver priority, typically they'll save those big bids for either, like, really impactful hitters or for closers. But the starting pitching on so many clubs this year is so messed up that getting a getting an impact starter could be even more valuable right now. I mean, between the Bumgarner owners and the Syndergaard owners and the Kluber owners, like, it just goes on and on. There's so many teams in each league that could use someone like Brios, or the next one that comes along, whether it's Brent Honeywell or whoever it ends up being from the minors. Like, those guys are going to be really valuable.
A couple of guys, we've actually talked about a good number of the guys on this list. Speaking of the uncertainty of starting pitching this year, these guys are all in the top 10 in ERA. Jason Vargas, Irvin Santana, Mike Leake, Andrew Triggs, Gio Gonzalez, and Dylan Bundy. I'm buying a couple of these guys, but my skepticism is always healthy. I'm coming around on Big Irv. You convinced me. Coming around, and plus, I feel like I'm not worthy of the Fantasy 411 if I don't have some love for longtime Fantasy 411 favorite Big Irv Santana. And I'm buying Bundy. I'm open to the idea that Gonzalez might be real, and I'm down on the others. Anybody from that bunch that you particularly like or dislike?
Interesting. I was interested to hear that you're buying on Bundy. His strikeout rate concerns me. Just like his K per nine right now is 6.3, which is pretty low. Although I will say that, to me, the AL East is less scary now than it has been in a long time, especially if you're on at least one of the better teams where, like, you know, the Rays lineup doesn't scare me, the Blue Jays lineup doesn't scare me. And the Yankees lineup's fine. The Orioles strike out a fair amount. They don't really scare me. And Boston hasn't been what they were last year. So I don't mind him from that perspective, but his strikeout rate concerns me a little bit. I think all of these players, you have to ride them out, almost like the Mark Reynolds theory. Like, you can't pull them. They've had enough good starts now. You can't pull them until they have at least a couple, you know, really bad starts. But if there's one that I like, it's definitely Santana. Gio Gonzalez, I agree with you. Maybe Gio Gonzalez could be back to being something similar to what he was before, which I always felt like was a little overrated because his whip's high.
Yeah.
But a fairly low ERA, you know, get to share a strikeout kind of pitcher. I don't think you can build a staff around any of them, but Santana's, like, I'm pretty much bought all in on him.
We will get to closers, two-star pitchers, and Gregor Chisholm in just a moment. But before we do, I want to take a moment to tell you about the Cut Forecast. The Cut Forecast is the podcast from the staff of MLB.com's Cut 4 section, which focuses on the lighter side of baseball. We really think you will enjoy it if you have stuck with us this far. It'll make you laugh, and you might learn something about baseball dogs or ballpark food. This week, they broke down David Ross's shocking deep run in Dancing with the Stars and Aaron Judge on The Tonight Show. That sounds like your kind of thing. Search Cut Forecast, C-U-T, the number 4, C-A-S-T, in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts, and click subscribe. We now get on with closers, and big news in closer land is Aroldis Chapman on the DL. They're saying about a month. I have Chapman, and I am bracing myself for more than that. I hear shoulder. I look at a guy who throws as hard as he does, and I am bracing myself for more than a month, and frankly, open to the possibility that it could be a very long time. So your question is, would Betances be a sell-high guy? To me, he's not. If I have Betances, I am riding that out. I'm going to take advantage of that great combination of strikeouts and saves. And I'm not going anywhere until I have, I don't think there's a point where I do the sell high thing. I could certainly see trading him, but to me, I'm not comfortable until Chapman is, I'm not comfortable parting with Betances until Chapman is pitching in rehab games. And at that point, you don't have the sell high. So I'm real nervous on Chapman in as far as that timetable. Do you have more confidence in him or more willingness to part with Betances?
No, going back to prior to the season, I'm pretty sure when we did the closer preview, we talked about how Chapman, like, we talked about just that aspect of him being worked really hard in the postseason last year. And struggling on the mound at times, basically from overuse, and the Cubs doing what they needed to do to win the World Series, and there's nothing wrong with that. And I wonder if these two things are related, which makes me more concerned. And I don't know if it should, but it does. And we talk like the same thing with Corey Kluber being on the DL. Sometimes I wonder if that's related to, you know, to how hard he was worked in the postseason last year. So that's generally with pitcher injuries, I assume that they'll take a little longer to come back than they say. I wonder if Chapman, like, so you're a Chapman owner, you said in one league, like, would you ever go to the Betances owner and offer him Chapman so that he has the two of them for the rest of the season and just get a solid closer, whether it's, I don't know, Ken Giles, Sunwano, Greg
Holland? Think about it. Yeah, I would definitely think about parting with Chapman if somebody were interested in taking that risk, because I just think the risk is really high right now.
And, I mean, when we're talking about 4.5 months left in the season and he's supposed to miss about a month of it, and if you believe that maybe he'll miss, say, 6 weeks of it, well, that's now he's only pitching 3 months out of the four, or sorry, I guess, there, yeah, 3 months out of the 4.5 months that are left. That's a really significant chunk of time. Yep. You might get more saves just to get Kelvin Herrera and hope that he stays as a closer for the whole season, just finding someone you believe in. But it might start by going to the Betances owner and saying,
yep,
how would you like to lock up these
right,
two awesome,
sure,
relievers and all the Yankees saves the rest of the way?
Sure, that makes sense. Addison Reed, Cord Knebel. I actually have Addison Reed, and I am starting to get a little worried just because, man, when Terry Collins has a reliever he trusts, that dude works a lot. And so I may be looking to get out of Reed at some point just because I have a feeling that when it goes, it's going to go. And I kind of like Knebel, so I'm – although I have Reed, I'd probably rather have the other guy. What about you?
Yeah, I think I would rather have Knebel. That's actually the reason that I was excited to talk about them today, because Reed is the one who's owned in more leagues and generated a lot more fantasy buzz. And Knebel's kind of flown under the radar. People have given him his pat on the back and said, yep, he's pitching really well this season. But they haven't really jumped on him like they have with Reed. And I've heard a lot of people talk about how good Reed has been overall since he joined the Mets, which is totally true. But if we go back just into the early part of 2015 and back to 2014, he was not a very effective reliever with the Diamondbacks at that time, and people were jumping off Reed and talking about him as though he had no future ever in the ninth inning again and was never going to get back to that form he showed at the beginning with the White Sox. Even with the White Sox, he was a really sketchy closer, like high threes, fours ERA. Like, I get it. He's better with the Mets than he's ever been, but I haven't forgotten about that those other times, so I don't view him as totally rock solid. As you mentioned, like they're working him hard with the Mets, and the Mets are just kind of a mess right now, and I think he's taking the brunt of that sometimes, where he had to come in the eighth inning the other day. Like, their bullpen's not stable right now. His usage isn't reliable. I would rather have Knebel, and I think probably almost every Reed owner could go out and swap him one for one for Knebel right now.
Just for a little bit of math here, the Mets have played 39 games this year, which means that over the Mets' last 201 games, Addison Reed has pitched in 101 of those games. He has,
wow,
pitched 98 and a third innings and 101 games out of the Mets' last 201. Now, maybe he holds up and maybe he's the guy, but one, closers are going to get up a little more often than they're going to pitch. There will be times when you get the guy up and you don't need him. I mean, again, maybe he's the exception, and maybe he's a guy who can actually hold up to 80 games and 80 innings year in, year out. But those guys seem to be the exception, and I would be looking to let that risk fall in somebody else's hand if I had the opportunity to.
Yeah, I mean, the usage is what drove Familia's value. Like, he had,
yep,
so many saves, and they worked him really hard, and he had been handling it quite well, but it makes Reed much more, I think, of a boom or bust option than Knebel. He could get a lot of saves or not. And in general, the Mets are like really not going in a great direction right now. Like, they're not playing well. Their starting pitching isn't holding up. Like, I'm not sure if they can generate the kind of save chances the rest of the way that we thought they would this year.
There is absolutely no one in the Nationals bullpen that I want. I briefly looked at Matt Albers, but I just don't trust anybody in there. There's nobody who's I like what's going on. You know, Trinan had an interesting moment. I could see Trinan working his way back. That's the one guy that I could kind of see getting back into there before the year is out. But are we just not in on anybody there right now?
Yeah, Coda Glover is actually still my guy out of them. Since he came back from the DL, he's thrown a total of 3 scoreless innings. If we're talking about throwing 3 scoreless innings, you can tell it's a really, really unreliable, shaky bullpen. But I think if I was in, say, a 15-team league and I was going to grab one of them, he's the one. But in anything shallower than that, I wouldn't. I really do feel, along with a lot of people in the baseball community, that they're just destined to trade for a closer,
yep,
at some point. So, but there are still plenty of saves to be had from, you know, May 18th through to at some point in July, because teams rarely do, maybe they will, but teams rarely make those major moves. you know, in the next few weeks from now. It's usually in July and often the second half of July. So there are saves there to be had, but maybe I would grab Glover in a deep league. That's about it. I'm not chasing any of them.
No. Two-parter on the Mariners. Are you holding on to Edwin Diaz just because the potential is so enormous, even though he has been bumped from the role? And is there anybody from that committee that you like at all while they are not using Diaz?
So, yeah, so I own Diaz in a league, and I am holding him. And you hit the nail on the head. It's because his upside is so tremendous. And this isn't like Francisco Rodriguez or something like that. Like, if Diaz, with his strikeout rate, if he had five scoreless outings in a row or something, he could get back into the ninth inning for them and then be like he was last season. So I am holding him. Tony Zick, maybe. From the committee, really no one. I'm not racing out to get anyone until I see someone get made probably two saves from that committee. Is there anyone you're interested in chasing right now?
No, I don't really like that.
Do you think Diaz will be the closer again?
At some
point?
There are a couple guys that if they emerged, I wouldn't mind. I wouldn't mind Cishek, particularly in Seattle, if he were to emerge. But until somebody is the guy, there's none of them that I trust. There are guys that I would get because I don't think they're all terrible. It's just when you're talking about four different guys, I don't even know, you know, how to handicap that. So
do you think Diaz gets more than 10 more saves this year?
We move to the two-star pitchers. And a couple of nice options in here. Mike Foltynewicz, home against Pittsburgh at San Francisco. Miguel Gonzalez at Arizona, home for Detroit. Germán Márquez at Philly, home for St. Louis. J.C. Ramirez at Tampa Bay and Miami. Ty Block at the Cubs and home for Atlanta. Jared Eichhoff, home for Colorado and Cincinnati. Lance Lynn at the Dodgers and the Rockies. Couple guys where I like the pitcher okay, but not the matchups. Couple guys where I like the matchups, but not the pitcher. But there are a couple where I like both. And the two that really jump out to me are Foltynewicz, who is a guy I'm just generally high on this year. And I like both those matchups. And Eichhoff is a guy I like quite a bit, like that strikeout potential. And I don't think they're great matchups. Those are two teams that can hurt you, and Philly's a good place to hit. But even so, neither of those matchups scares me. And I like the pitcher. So those are probably the two guys that jump out to me. Anybody from that group that you like more than I do?
Yeah. Well, yeah, no, because Foltynewicz is the one that – he's the one of them that really jumps out to me. Just that a home to Pittsburgh and an at San Francisco is about as good as it gets for matchups right now in the National League. So I think that's just – I have him active in probably every league, and he's sitting on waivers in a lot of them. The rest of them I think are all kind of risky, like – J.C. Ramirez has been good enough that I'm probably considering him at the Rays and at the Marlins. For Ty Block, I don't like the Cubs, but the home to the Braves is fine. And he's really interesting in that all of his major league starts have been quite good, except one, which was really, really terrible a couple weeks ago. So I think there's boom or bust there. And he hasn't been striking out a lot of batters, but I mean, when he's at home, he could be fine. It's just the at Cubs. And I'm not as scared of the Cubs right now as I usually am because they just haven't been really hot lately, but it still scares me enough.
All right. Well, in just a moment here, we are going to bring in Gregor Chisholm of MLB.com, our Blue Jays beat reporter, to talk about a variety of Blue Jays fantasy topics. Before that, we're going to say thanks to Fred Zinke for taking the time to talk. And thanks, everybody, for listening to Fantasy 411.
And now we're joined by MLB.com's Blue Jays beat reporter, Gregor Chisholm, because Blue Jays have more than a few interesting fantasy topics to talk about. So we will get right to that. And I think maybe the most interesting question is about this rotation, because coming into the year, the rotation was really considered the strength of this club, and it hasn't entirely been that. But when you look at these guys, you look at from the fantasy perspective, you look at not just wins and ERA, but strikeouts. If you could pick one of these guys to the rest of the year, who are you taking?
Ooh, with the strikeouts. I mean, the strikeout guy on this team was supposed to be Francisco Liriano.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a guy you look at with those eye-popping strikeout numbers, and it just hasn't been there for him early on this year. And what's going to be interesting to see is how much the shoulder played a factor in that. I mean, this is a guy I came into the year thinking was going to be a real kind of breakthrough guy. I mean, we've seen that from him in the past in Pittsburgh. And I kind of thought that coming off the way he looked in the second half of last year after joining the Blue Jays, I really thought he was going to be one coming in as last year before free agency. I thought that was going to be a big year for him. I still think he can turn it around, and if you're looking for a guy with high strikeout totals, that's certainly him. The other guys, I mean, you're going to get some low ERAs, clearly, from Stroman and Marco Estrada. Stroman's coming off an outing where he did get a lot of swing and miss and did get a lot of high strikeouts. I wouldn't expect a lot from that, from him moving forward. He's still more of a bit of a contact guy, but in terms of wins, Estrada's had a lot of tough luck with the win category. He should start getting more because the numbers have been there for the most part. He's probably been the most consistent starter that they've had. But it's an interesting case when you look at that rotation. If you're looking for an under-the-radar guy, someone that people might be selling low on or have cut loose by now, Lariano could still be that guy.
Staying with the rotation, guy that's really kind of caught some eyes recently, and somebody actually you were on in the spring, Joe Biagini has stepped in and really done a nice job as a starter. I think the biggest question for him, because I don't think anybody envisions him as some kind of savior. I don't think anybody envisions him as a one or two, but as a fill-in guy, the biggest question is opportunity. Do you anticipate him being a guy who gets 15, 20 more starts this year?
He's going to need some help in order to get there in terms of the health of this roster. I mean, he's still going to be on the outside looking in when everybody is healthy. But Jay Happ's been missing in action for a long period of time right now. The Blue Jays still don't have a set timetable on when he might get back on the mound. And if something were to happen to any of the other starters the rest of the way too, I mean, Biagini's very clearly that number six guy for the team right now. But he's someone who has an awful lot of upside. I mean, you looked at the job that he did in the bullpen last year, and he was someone who was kind of pushed into that role, but has the ability to do a lot more than that because he's got a starter type arsenal. He's got the build that they're looking for. And I think, depending on what happens with this team, this is someone that they would really want to give a look at in the second half, because the Blue Jays in next year are going to have, I mean, they've got Lariano as a pending free agent. They've got Estrada as a pending free agent. They've got a couple of holes coming up. And I think they really want to get a nice long look to see if he can be an answer for the rotation. And I think he can be. So in the short term, I think you probably look at some of the matchups in terms of when you'd want to use him on your fantasy team. But he's a guy who's going to be the number five starter on this team. But he's someone who has the upside of occasionally being able to put up that number three type stuff.
This is kind of a consistent theme with this team is buy low opportunities. Some signs of life from Jose Bautista lately, though. Some encouraging signs. Do you anticipate that this is the beginning of a return to form? Or do you anticipate that this may continue to be at least something of a scuffling year for Bautista?
I think it's going to be a return to form of 2016. Certainly he's not going to be able to regain the guy that he was before, but he's still someone who's going to put up more power numbers than what he put up in the first month of the season. I mean, the first month is one that he wants to completely throw out, and it wasn't just the fact that he's a guy who relies so much on plate discipline, and he really seemed to kind of lose command of the strike zone a little bit in terms of swinging at a lot of pitches outside of the zone. We've seen less of that over the last couple weeks, and I think in April a lot of people wanted to jump the conclusion that the power's gone, the bat speed's slow, and he might be done, and I don't think that's the case by any means. I think we're seeing a lot of those things come back. He's starting to catch up to fastballs like he wasn't doing earlier in the year, and so I think you're looking at a guy who, if you throw out the first month of what he did, he's going to be probably more of that 25 home run type pace the rest of the way, and he's still going to give you a high on base percentage. I think those walk numbers are going to continue to increase, but in terms of batting average, it's not going to be where it was before. I think the slow start's hampering that as well, but at the end of the year he's still not going to be someone who's going to be hitting 280. I think you're going to see someone 250 or below.
Beyond Bautista, several guys in this lineup, this is really, I think, at least optimists thought this was going to be a really potent lineup. Mm-hmm. And even beyond Bautista, there's several guys who really haven't lived up to expectations, some due to health and some just performance. When you look at that group of guys, and you look at Tulowitzki, Martin, Morales, Travis, any of those guys that you really identify as, this is somebody to get in on because this first 6 weeks is not really what you expect the rest of the year?
Travis is the guy for me. And I mean, he's already, people are probably starting to buy him up a little bit over the last couple weeks after what he's done. But going into this year, I thought he was someone who, maybe not this season, but he's someone who has 200 hit potential. I mean, he's a guy who's going to hit for a high average. He's not going to get you a ton of walks, but he will draw some. He's not like Kevin Pillar was in the past in that regard. So he's going to get you some walks, but he's going to hit for a high batting average, and he's going to get an awful lot of extra base hits. And I think his power is a little bit underrated. We still haven't seen a lot of that this year, but we've seen the 14 doubles, 12 that came as he set the franchise record for most doubles by a second baseman in a span of two weeks. And I think some of those balls are going to start leaving the yard as well. So I think he's got a little bit of underrated power. He's going to get you an awful lot of hits. The interesting thing to watch with him is whether this, you know, in a couple weeks, if he's able to sustain this, whether or not he moves back to the top of the order. And if he moves back to the top of the order, then I think you're going to see the run total increase as well. But it's going to be easier said than done for him to get that spot, because Kevin Pillar's kind of seized that opportunity and run with it.
One last thing before we let you actually go cover a baseball game. Anybody from the farm system that people should have an eye on to maybe make an impact on the lineup and therefore in fantasy lineups or fantasy rotations between now and the end of the year?
The Jays are a little bit... they're a little bit behind the eight ball in terms of that for this year. I think Rowdy Tellez could be somebody in the second half of the year, but he would need somebody to get hurt in order for an opportunity to really happen for him. Either Justin Smoke or Kendrys Morales, if one of those two guys missed an extended period of time, he's someone who could jump up and kind of enter the mainstream fold there. The rest, probably not. This is more of a mix and match year. We've seen a lot of guys kind of come up and down. A lot of the guys who could potentially make an impact are already kind of in the bullpen, whether it's a Ryan Tepera or Danny Barnes. Those guys' opportunities could increase as the year goes on if they phase out guys like Jason Grilly. But for the most part, I think, you know, who's the people who are here are the ones that are going to take up the bulk of the work, and you're going to see some of those mid-level guys go back down to the minors, because this team's starting slowly but surely starting to get healthy, but we're still probably about a year away before some of those younger prospects really kind of enter the fold.
All right, Gregor Chisholm, Blue Jays beat reporter for MLB.com. Thanks for taking some time to chat with the Fantasy 411.